10 verses that we have in the 32nd chapter of Genesis, verses 22 to 32, and it's where Jacob ends up wrestling with a man or God. Actually, it's God, but we looked at that last week. I'm going to read it to you because we're going to look at a couple other things that are involved in this thing. There are four parts of it that I wanted to look at, and those four parts were sometimes we're wrestling with God or man in terms of our lives. We don't really know who we're actually wrestling with. Sometimes it's a situation, but it may be God that has initiated that situation or circumstance. We're looking at what's in a name, and we looked at that to a certain extent last week. The third part is midlife's and the crisis of midlife, and then when God decides to change your name is the fourth part. I'm hoping we can finish these four things up. So let me read it to you. The same night he rose and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and likewise everything that he had. And these five words that are coming up are really the key to this whole thing. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and Jacob's thigh was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no more be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Tell me, I pray, your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." So there's a sense in which Jacob knows at this point that he was wrestling with God. The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh on the sinew of the hip. Last week, we looked at the wrestling with God or man situations, and I'm not going to go into that. If you want that, pick up the CD from last week, because that's we covered that really last week. This is what's in a name. We picked up on that. I want to raise up to you in Hebrew, a name means to be high, or it's a monument, or it's raised up. So a name is really has to do with your identity and your personality in terms of that. And we talked about the difference between what the government does with us and what God does with us. The government says we're all individuals, we're all so important and all this, but all they do is give us a number. And we looked at that. But God writes us on the palm of his hand. He gives us all of us a name in terms of that. And so names are important to us. That's why your name is important. It represents who you are. It has to do with your identity. Names mean things. And as a follower of Jesus, you are called Christian. That's a designation about who you are. A follower of Buddha is a Buddhist, or Muhammad is a Muslim, or Islam, member of Islam. Moses, when he was at the burning bush, God spoke to him and he told him his name, which is Yahweh, Y-H-W-H, and the vowels, we don't know about the vowels for sure because they didn't write vowels down, but it means I cause to be. We've heard it called I am. Well, it is I cause to be. And so Moses learned God's name. Before that, nobody had a name for God. That is his identity. we call God a lot of things. In the Old Testament, you got a lot of different names, El Shaddai, Elohim, and there's a bunch of different ones in there. But Yahweh is the name of God that was given to Moses. And Moses went down to Egypt on the authority of his name. And Jesus was crucified, and one of the reasons that he was crucified was he claimed to be God. And when Peter and James and John were at the Gate Beautiful and they had that cripple that was there and he was asking for alms, Peter says, I don't have any money, but here's what I'll give you. In the name of Jesus, rise and walk. And here we have Jacob being, his name is Jacob, which means supplanter, one who wrestles to overthrow. And that's basically what he's doing with this man or God there. And actually, this wrestling match is kind of like you might have five or six words on a tombstone, and that describes a person's life. This whole wrestling match is kind of a culmination of how his life has been up to this point. It's a picture of his life, wrestling with God, with man, and that's the way he has been. Well, the last 20 years, essentially he was doing that with Esau before he even left, and God says at this point in time, I'm going to change your name. And when God changes his name, he's giving him a new identity, a new purpose, and a new direction in life. He says, you are a prince of God or one who rules with God. Okay? And that's the encapsulation of what we covered last week in terms of this. We also talked about the wrestling part. The third part of this that I want to talk to you about is midlife stuff. Now, one of the things we have to do when we're looking at the story of Jacob, we have to kind of interpret. He was about 40 years old when he left his parents and was being chased out by Esau. But it was like, his life was 150 years or so or like that. So this is about when he's 60. But I want you to think of him in midlife. Because in reality, that's the way they lived longer and these things were kind of so. So I want you to interpret this. Granted, he's about 60. In terms of our thing, he might be considered old. But put him around 40 in your head. And he grew up. He had trouble with his brother. And I would say, actually left when he was 40. But you could think about it like he was 20. He grew up and he had trouble with his brother and he had to get out of there. And he goes away and for 20 years he has been over with Laban. In the midst of that, he fell in love with Rachel and then Laban tricked him and he ended up with Leah first and then Rachel. So he had two wives. He also had two sort of wives with the handmaidens. He ends up with 11 kids, and this all happens over a 20-year period. He's working for a company, and the company keeps messing with him in terms of his salary and everything else because that's exactly what Laban was doing. And so he comes to this point where he's really in midlife, and he says, I'm not getting anywhere here. And I've got nothing but trouble. And he says a big change needs to take place. And in many ways, he is a picture of midlife crisis. Now, I have taken tours in people's lives for a lot of years in terms of midlife and all that goes with it. And some of the things that go with midlife. God. say you're around 35 to 50, anybody 35 to 50, you kind of fit into this category. After 50, you may think you're in midlife, but I don't think you're going to live that long. so it wouldn't be midlife. But anyway, midlife crisis. This is when depressions hit, frustration in life hits. You know, it's when you end up wrestling with where you are in terms of your life. Now, we could talk about it from wrestling with God or man. We did that last week, and that's where you reach the top of the mountain and you kind of look back in terms of your life. We've heard the saying, life begins at 40. Well, back in 1900, 10% of us never got past 40. Middle age was about 20, I think, at that point in time. But today, it's 75 to 80. So when you're looking at this, there's something that happens to us between the ages of 35 and 40. Now, I'm going to talk about men first, but I won't leave your ladies out of this. You know, we're looking at Jacob. There's a lot of things that are happening in terms of his life at that point in time, and there's a picture of it in those 10 verses, and it's like it's encapsulated in there. Now, we men don't talk about this stuff very much, especially to one or one. But I have kind of come to the conclusion that men are more unhappy than women. Depression sets in with men a lot stronger, I think, in some ways. This midlife can bring you to a place where you feel worthless or hopeless because of the choices that you've made in the last 20 years, 15 years. You can think about it in terms of, God, did I really do all that? And you begin to feel worthless in terms of yourself. There's another thing that happens between 35 and 50 that we don't talk about, but that's fatigue. Because what happens is that you can no longer run with the boys, so to speak, when you're 20 to 25. The other thing that happens between 35 and 50 is physical disorders begin to happen. You know, you start developing high blood pressure. You might get diabetes. You might have aches and pains you didn't have them when you were 25. You could go out and play basketball for 3 hours, and it wouldn't bother you much. But now I need a general anesthetic. You know, physical disorders. And the other thing, another thing that happens at 35 to 50 is, in some ways, we are trapped in our silence as men because we don't talk about this stuff with one another. Your wife may hear about some of it as you complain about things, but we don't talk to one another. So in some ways, we get trapped in a silence. And out of that, sometimes we think that nobody else is experiencing this except me. And those five words where Jacob was left alone really ring true for men. And he was wrestling. Was he wrestling with life, his life up to that point? Was he wrestling with the choices that he'd made over the last 20? What is he wrestling? Is he really wrestling with man or God? And who is our adversary? When we're 35 to 50, men, who is our adversary in this life? Is it God? Or is it life in general? See, I have found that it is painful for men to talk about this with one another. It is not easy for men to talk about their problems, or at least their perceived problems. And what is also happening is there's an awareness that is happening in men, and you're looking at all you've done in your life, and you wonder, well, is that all there is to this? Am I going to be able to accomplish what I wanted to do? And so all this stuff begins to happen. I've got some other scriptures here that I want to raise up to you. I got to make sure I got the right outline here in front of me. So, turn to Psalm 25. Yeah, we're going to... Psalm 25, verses 6 to 8. And then we're going to kind of back up on that and look at it again. 16, 18. Wait a minute, where am I? This is the wrong sheet. 25, 16, 18. This is a psalm of David. By the way, David was one of these guys who went through midlife too. Turn to thou to me and be gracious to me, for I am lonely and afflicted. Now, this is supposed to be a psalm that David wrote. He says, I'm lonely and I'm afflicted. In other words, the life is bugging the heck out of me. He says, relieve the troubles of my heart and bring me out of my distresses. Consider my affliction and my trouble and forgive all my sins. What is he doing? He's facing the adversary. That's what he's doing in the psalm. When he's saying these things, who's he saying them to? He's talking to God with this, but he's facing the adversary. Is his adversary God? Is it life? What's going on here? Back up to verses 4 and 5. He's also write this, make me to know thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. For thee I wait all the day long. Now, if you think about this scripture, what he's doing is he's talking to God, but he's complaining to God about what's going on in terms of his life. And he's probably in midlife at this point in time, but he's also appealing to God, but he's all alone. David is alone, even in the midst of this. The another thing that happens in terms of midlife, and midlife I'm going to define it as 35 to 50. Now, I have encountered a couple of boys that were over 50 that thought they were in midlife, but they didn't live that long, so I know that that wasn't their midlife. But you can do this. There's another thing that happens between 35 and 50, and that's your second childhood. This is where you reassess your life. That's the theme. I'm going to reassess everything that goes, and then you can ask these questions. Who am I? Who am I really? What's my purpose in this life? What is the meaning of my life? And then these are reassessment moments that we have in terms of our lives. Now, I'm talking to the guys right now. I'll get to you gals in a minute. But it has to do with meaning and identity and purpose. And it's stuff that we're looking at right here in these 10 verses. Who am I? What is my purpose? What's my meaning in life? And let me tell you, here's what it affects. It will affect your marriage. It will affect your job. It will affect your friendships. It will affect your commitments, and those commitments include your commitment to God. Because there's a bunch of forces that begin to converge on us men between the ages of 35 and 50. One of them is biological. We don't have the energy that we used to have. And we know that, and we catch ourselves, can't do it like I used to. Another thing that happens biologically is weight gain, usually. We put on pounds in places. We lose muscle mass. We have to struggle to keep ourselves in shape, so to speak. Should I mention the hair loss? Mine stayed. But every so often one falls out, and I wonder what held it in the day before. But hair, you know, we don't really talk about that stuff. But it's there, and it eats on us. And then the other thing that happens between 35 and 50 is death becomes real. Our own mortality. You know, when you're in your 20s, you're immortal. Or at least you think you are. Now, that's the first thing, is all the biological stuff that happens to us. And it's real. The second thing is psychological. Not biological, but psychological. There's a certain sense in which we feel less of a man. And it has to do with, I'm not going to reach the goals that I had for my life when I was like 22 or 3 or something like that. I'm just not going to reach those goals. And it's psychological. And it messes with our minds. And, you know, I stand up here. I'm past that. So I can tell you this. I'm half the man I used to be in a lot of ways. But you're less of a man. At least that's the way you feel about things. The third thing has to do with our social status or social understanding of life. We have biological, we have psychological, we have social. And this is all you have to do is watch TV. Oh, what is out there in terms of that? Youth is good, age is bad. Isn't that right? That's what we see. You know, there's three things that never go out of style. Youth, good looks, and money. They never go out of style. But anyway, all you have to do is turn the TV on, and what do they show you? They're showing you youth is good and age is bad. And so that works on you in terms of your understanding of things. And so then you begin to reevaluate your life and all that that means. And that has to do with your status in life. That could be have to do with your wife, your kids, your job or career, your friends, the world, and God. And Jacob was left alone. And that's what we do. We ponder and we think, we believe we are alone in this. And Jacob was left alone. You could put that on this tombstone if you want to. 10 verses of life coming to a head. This is a dangerous time for men. Let me tell you, it's dangerous because it has to do with your emotional understanding of life, your directions in life. It has to do with gyrations in terms of how things work in this life and all kinds of things. And one of the things that I see men do between the ages of 35 and 50 is that they will throw away God. And if you throw God away, that's where... Now, how do you do that? Well, that's when God almost he becomes a myth. Oh, I don't know if I really believe in God at all. I don't know if there is a God. I don't know anything. And I'm going to do what I want. And God becomes a myth. And what that does in the man who is 35 to 50, all it does is it increases the instability. The other thing that can happen is God may not be a myth, but God can be your enemy. He's my enemy. Therefore, I'll go to war against him and anything that represents him. Psalm 62, verses 1 and 2. I can find it here. I know I can find it. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silence, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her vindication goes forth as brightness and her salvation as a burning torch. Well, one of the things that is talking about is that what's right and what's wrong about life in terms of things like that. And turn to Psalm 22, verses 6 and 8. Well, no wonder this doesn't work. I'm in Isaiah. it helps if you're in the right book. I've been leading you astray and I didn't even know it because I was being led astray. 62. Psalm 62, verses 1 and 2. For God alone my soul waits in silence. From him comes my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be greatly moved. One of the things that I will say to men who are 35 to 50, if you forsake God in your life, what it does is it creates an instability in your life to such extent. If in the midst of midlife you hold on to God, these verses right here become your foundational strength. They also tie you to the ground, you might say, in terms of that. Let's turn to Psalm 22, verses 6 to 8. But I am a worm and no man, scorned by men and despised by the people. All who see me mock at me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. He committed his cause to the Lord. Let him deliver him. In other words, this verse is say that if you hang on to God, you might not be the worm that you think you are. Because inside us men, it's not just the life circumstance and situation. Inside of us, the pressures build up in us and they begin to work on us in terms of how we live our lives. And there's always this fight. You got God on this side and you've got, me on the other side. Now, this can happen in our lives in a lot of different ways over the years, all of us. But there is something about this age between 35 and 50 because that's where the reassessment comes into play. And sometimes the crisis is necessary. You notice what happens to Jacob. There is a crisis in his life. The crisis is, I'm not getting anywhere with Laban at this point in time, and I need to get away from this particular setting of my life because it's killing me in here. I'm working for the company, and the company doesn't care at all, and I got 4 women and 11 children, and what am I going to do? And God talks to him and tells him, he says, go home. So now he's going home, but the crisis is there as well because he's left alone by the river Jabbok, but his brother's coming with how many men? 400. And the crisis is necessary, and Jacob was left alone. Let me see. I've got another psalm here, 77, verses 5 and 6, and then 3 and 4. This is where you look backwards. I consider the days of old. I remember the years long ago. I commune with my heart in the night. I meditate and search my spirit. In other words, those two verses right there say, I'm looking back now. The sins of my past, the bad choices that I've made in terms of my life, and I'm looking backwards at them. Verses 3 and 4, I think of God and I moan. Oh, God, I can't believe it. And when you're going back in time, I meditate and my spirit faints. thou dost hold my eyelids from closing. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. In other words, he can't sleep because all this stuff of his past is coming back to him in the midst of crisis and the midst of both external and internally he's dealing. And Jacob was left alone. The enemies of men between the ages of 35 and 50 are their body, because it just isn't what it used to be. A lot of times it's their work. You know, they may have been slugging it out or doing this, and they're just coming to a place where it's just, I just don't want to do it anymore. By the way, ladies, this could also happen to you in terms of this, but we'll get to your side in just a minute. Family can be a problem. I tell you what, when you're 40 years old and you got a 16-year-old son in your household or something like that, and he's a pretender to the throne and you're dealing with that, your family becomes your enemy. Your spouse becomes your enemy. And God can become your enemy. We don't say it, men, but it's there. And we are left alone. And this passage here is a time when Jacob is left alone. And you have 10 verses that kind of encapsulate his whole life right there, both his past and what he's done for the last 20 years and his brother coming after him and all that. Now, that's what's going on in this thing. And you, it's just what I see. I see this guy in midlife. Okay, ladies, I don't want to leave you without, I don't want you to feel left out of this. You gals can have the same things that I've just described in terms of men, but you also have some other things that you can deal with between the ages of 35 and 50 as well. And one of the things that women can experience is loneliness. And who am I? You can feel worthless. You can feel unnecessary. You can be drowning in terms of what's going on around you in terms of your life. And you can also have this idea that you don't really have an identity. Am I a geisha girl? Am I a chauffeur? Am I a secretary? Am I a scrub woman? What am I really in terms of my life? And when the last child goes to school, I'm not talking about empty nest now. I'm talking about when the last child gets to that age where they go to school and you're left alone. What happens then? These things that come up in terms of how you look at yourself, in terms of that, where do I go from here in terms of my life? Not to mention MTV and all them hard bodies out there, and you're dealing with sagging and drooping. I know these things. Don't think that I live in some pristine temple someplace. I understand how things work, and that is an issue, is it not, ladies? I'm just telling you the truth. I mean, when you're 35 to 50, it's not what you see on MTV. And there's this is a time of change and time of temptation, and you're dealing with things. Like when that last kid goes to school, then you're there, what do I do now? Who am I really? What's going on? There's also another possibility. There's the danger of infidelity at this point in time in women. If you go out and you say, I'm going to be a working girl, and you go out and you do that, and that's the way you change things up in terms of that. But you know, there is that possibility of infidelity in terms of even that kind of situation. Maybe I need a new husband. I mean, I'm tired of him. You know? Things start happening, and then you can become a runaway wife. By the way, I have dealt with people who have gone through this. And men are as messed up as women are when this kind of stuff happens with a runaway wife. Oh, they're insane. And it's midlife insanity. And not only that, but you know, girls, the biological clock is ticking. And even though you may not talk about it a lot, or you do among yourselves probably, but it's there and it's ticking all the time. And you're not going to reach the goals that you wanted in life either, or maybe you did and those goals don't fit you. Now, and so what do? Youth is good, age is bad, and you reevaluate things. And you get trapped by roles, ladies, just the same way men get trapped in roles too. And you know, the time of the quiet nest during the day when the kids are at school. You realize this, mother is a passing phase. Although I've reached the age where I know this truth too, you're never done with them. But at 35 to 50, mother is a passing phase. Maybe I have misplaced the meaning of my life because of that. As mother or homemaker or whatever, and I know that I'm up against the clock. And so between 35 and 50, you may actually become Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman has to do double duty. She has a job and a family, and she's doing all of it together at the same time. And what is it doing to her in terms of her life? Are you coping with that? Job and family and all that? Wonder Woman? Are you a girl or are you a woman? You know, the youth culture tells us youth is beautiful, age is bad. And so that messes with you. And you're climbing up through your 20s and your 30s, and you hit that plateau, and there you are. And you may be living in a stale marriage. Stale. It's kind of like stale bread. You know, and why is the marriage stale in terms of this thing? Well, it could be because you're just too busy. Both of you may be too busy. Also, I run into women who are battered. And you can be physically battered, and we talk about that in society a lot, but you can be emotionally battered as well. You can also get to that place where you're bored. You know that song, Pina Colada? That's the one I think of. You know, you're laying there side by side, and you're thinking about something else. The other thing that happens with ladies is mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? And the marks of time. And, you know, in that story of Snow White and the evil witch, you know, there comes a time when you play the older lady in life. And the appearance is a problem, isn't it? Because it is a bitter fight. It has to do with hair and skin and weight. Hair is gray, is old. And skin, well, you get that new wrinkle. And weight, fat is old. And then you fit. I mean, 35 to 50. There's the menopause monster, too, that begins to happen. Does it not? Don't tell me this doesn't work on you girls, because I know it does. All this stuff I'm talking about. And are you wrestling by the river Jabbok, and are you left there all alone? You see, midlife is one of these things that happens, and the mirror is part of the problem in terms of this stuff. And you get defeated, I shouldn't say it, by sagging self-esteem. There is a certain sense we ought to make fun of it to a certain extent because we all go through it. Some of us may be there and some of us may not be there, but you know, Paul Simon sang a song, I don't know how many years ago it was, but it was this, "Who's going to love you when your looks are gone?" Mine was, you know, the old Beatles song, "When I'm 64. Well, that passed by. But, you know, that Paul Simon song is really interesting. I don't know, "Who's going to love you when your looks are gone?" And then he answers the question in the song. He said, "God will." See, part of this is all about how we see ourselves. You know, what makes you worthwhile? Beauty. And some women go on that for as much as they can. Others go on brains. You know, if I'm just smart enough, I can do this. Or how much money you have, because if you got money in the bank, you can do what you want. So other women do it through busyness. You know, you got to produce something, so you're out there working it out and everything. This is how, and women also figure this out by belonging. And it has to do with being a part of a group. This is all out there, folks. We just don't talk about this stuff. We manage to do it alone a lot of times. We go through this stuff alone. And Jacob was left alone. We get defeated. Depression comes upon us. You know, we have so many ills in this nation of ours, and a lot of them are psychological and emotional and all that. We get weighed down by what the world tries to tell us about ourselves. MTV, age is bad. And so sadness and hopelessness and despair and all these things come into us. I have a bunch of scriptures here I want to walk through. How am I doing? I got time. In Romans chapter 5, I jot these things down when I'm looking at it, and I can't remember why. let's pass on that one. Let's go to Numbers chapter 11. I didn't mark my book today. Chapter 11, verses 11 to 15. And it says this, "But the land which you are going over to possess you..." That's Deuteronomy. It helps if you get the right book. God. As I said, I didn't mark my book today. So therefore, here's what we get. "Moses said to the Lord, 'Why hast thou dealt ill with thy servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight that you do lay the burden of all this people upon me? Did I conceive all this people?' Did I bring them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a sucking child to the land which you did swear to give to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all these people? For they weep before me and say, give us meat. And he goes on and he goes on and on. And what is he doing? He says, I am human. I can't take care of my life, let alone theirs. And one of the things that we deal with is realizing that we can't handle everything. We can't handle it in midlife, but we can't handle everything in any time of our life as well. In 1 Kings chapter 19, Elijah, I know what it is. In 1 Kings chapter 19, Elijah has just dealt with the 400 prophets of Baal, and Jezebel, that sweetheart, she says, I'm going to kill you, and he goes off running. He ends up in this cave, and he says, woe is me, man, just take my life. I can't deal with this anymore. He couldn't deal with the crisis that was in his own life. How many times do we run up against that stuff in terms of this? In Ruth chapter 1, and I know where Ruth is. Joshua, Judges, Ruth. Chapter 1, and it's this pair of girls, basically, verses 20 and 21. She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, which means bitterness. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has afflicted me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? In other words, she's saying this, hey, God has whipped up on me and left me hanging, and she's dealing, don't call me Naomi, call me bitterness. And we do these kinds of things to ourselves as well in terms of this. Job, now Job's harder to find, but I found it. Chapter 3. Now we know that Job is a man who gets whipped up on, but let me tell you, they talk about the patience of Job and how great he was and all this, but let me tell you what, Job was left alone, just like we get left alone. Here's what he says in chapter 3. Why did I not die at birth, come forth from the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breasts that I should suck? For then I should have lain down and been quiet. I should have slept. Then I should have been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth, who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, or who filled their houses with silver? Or why was I not as a hidden, untimely birth? Basically, he's saying, you know, I don't need this. My life stinks. I can't handle all this stuff that is being thrown at me. And Jacob was left alone. The wrestling match, I know this, everybody here, there have probably been nights in your life when you were left alone. And it's just part of this stuff. So when you read this stuff in Scripture, we're talking about discovering God's will, and Jacob's doing this as well in terms of this, and there's a wrestling match going on here between God and him and the midlife. It has to do with all the change events that are taking place in his life. And I've seen enough people over the years, and I've known myself to know that there's all kinds of changing events in terms of those things. And you got to deal with that. How are you going to choose to deal with that? What are your decisions going to be? Now, this is midlife crisis here. One of the things that also is happening here is redefined value. New perspectives on self, or new perspective on other people, God and this world. Now, this is a transition time. It can be a crisis time. Now, you don't have to necessarily be in midlife to have a crisis time. You can pass through this time and never know what it means, though. That's one of the things that I've noticed about people. As I say, I take tours in people's lives, and some men and some women between the ages of 35 and 50, when they're passing through midlife crisis, you can pass through that time and never know what it meant. You can just go on past it and get through it and go and live your life the best way you know, and you never took a good look at yourself or who God is in the midst of this. One of the things that we look at here, Jacob is coming to a place where he says, am I God's man in this happening in my life or not? And God is dealing with him at that point in time, and he says, okay, you had a conversion experience back at Bethel, and we're going back there, by the way, Jacob, but we're coming to a place now in your life where you and I have to deal. We have to look at who your life really is. We have to give you an enlarged perception of what it means to be my man in the world, or woman. And so we're wrestling with this, and God puts you in that wrestling match. Are you a girl? Or are you a woman? Are you a boy? Or are you a man? And the role of God is to be the one who enhances the wrestling match in the midst of the crisis. Is God an ally or an enemy? That's another thing that happens. Because when you're dealing with God, you know, Jesus, what a friend we have in Jesus. Yeah. Up to a point. There comes a point when even he calls a spade. He says, listen, we're going further. And he tells Peter, you get behind me because you don't know what you're talking about. There comes a time in our lives when God says that to us. And he appears to be almost an enemy to us. In fact, that's what you think he is. What is God doing here? Why does God change Jacob's name? Why is this wrestling match taking place? What is this really all about? And you can just apply this to your own life as well. What is this that God is trying to do with me in terms of my life all the time? And this is what, here is God's concern for you, for me, for Jacob as well, because Jacob was the pathway for redemption for humanity. He wants you to be all that you can be. He is concerned with the whole person, who you are, your identity. And he tells him, he says, he gets done with this, and he says, no longer are you going to be Jacob, one who wrestles with God and man. I'm going to change your image of yourself, the perception of who you think you are in this life. And this encounter with God is life-shaping. And you know what? If God gets in your face like this, it is a wrestling match. And one of the things that happens to Jacob is he gets crippled up. And he walks into this for 20 years, he's got a strut to him. You know, you think about this, even though, I mean, he's leaving Laban and all that, and he says, but you know, everything's gone his way in terms of the business. Now, family life's a little tricky, but he's managed to work that out with those girls too and all those kids. So he comes into this thing, and he's encountering his past. Oh, he's encountering his past, and it's a life-shaping moment here, and God gets in his face, and they get into a wrestling match together, and the cocky, strutting Jacob ends up with a limp because God cripples him, sort of. Now, one of the questions is, does God do this to people? Oh, not our God who is all meek and mild and Jesus and all that. Well, if you read the Bible, he is not just loving and caring about things in life. Because we're going to see just in a few chapters, he's going to kill people. He kills some people. And I don't know what you think that Jesus died on the cross for, but I'm here to tell you, he has a problem with certain parts of who we think we are. And it could have cost. And another thing about God, I just love people who try to put him in a box. Oh, he's got to be the way I want him to be in terms of that sense. Who is this God we worship, really? You know, I can stand up here and I say, you know, God brought me through such and such and stuff like that. But I tell you what, I can also tell you that he was purifying me. He was training me. He was working on me. And he has hurt me over the years. And I know another thing, that when God is shaping you, Jack doesn't like it sometimes. But Jacob here, God is working on the whole man. And let me tell you what, if you claim to be God's man or woman in this world, and you really want to follow where he leads you in terms of your life, he will shape you. And that shaping can hurt a lot. And God is saying to Jacob here, we have to get serious about who you are, Jacob, right now. Well, I've let you slide for 20 years. I told you I'd be with you and I'd get you back home, but I said, we have to get serious about who you are right now and what you're about, because you're going back to Bethel, that place where you met me in the first place. And so the wrestling match happens, and it happens in a midlife crisis for him, or at a crisis, and we can have crisis anytime. Now, the fourth thing here is when God changes your name. And I don't know if I got enough time to talk about that, but I do know this, that God changes people's name in the Bible regularly. He changed Abraham. Abram was Abram. And then he said, no longer am I going to call you Abram. I'm going to call you Abraham. And he said, by the way, your wife Sarai is no longer going to be Sarai, she's going to be Sarah. And in both of those names, there's a sense of which he puts that guttural sound into it, and that comes from the root word is ruach, which is the word for spirit. So basically when he said to Abraham and Sarah, he said, I'm putting my spirit into your life. So that it was not just a matter of your flesh, but a matter of your spirit. And he changed his name, and that's a function of the Spirit there. In John chapter 1, Jesus meets Simon, and he says, you're going to be Peter. By the way, the root word Simon has to do with impulsiveness and unpredictability and shifting and vacillating, and like shifting sand. He says, you're not going to be that. You're going to be a solid rock. But there was a transition period. By the way, do you think that Peter wrestled with Jesus? I think so. The transformation took place over a 3-year period. Called him rock before he ever was one. But there came a day. And maybe I'll end with this. In Matthew chapter 16, there came a day when he talks about this stuff in terms of Peter. Chapter 16 of Matthew, verses 13 and 8. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do men say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others say Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon replied, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I'll build your church. In other words, he's saying, on this identity that I am giving to you, that's what's going to build the church. And that is true of every disciple of Jesus. By the way, it wasn't much down the road there. He says, oh, and I've got to go to Jerusalem and die. And Peter said, no, God, we don't want that to happen. And he just said, nope, get behind me. You do not know what you're talking about. And there was the wrestling match right there. And let me tell you, when you think that you've got it figured out how God wants you to live your life, then that's exactly when it happens. Now, by the way, every one of us, God changes our name. We are no longer just a person out of this world. We are a child of God, named by Jesus. And Jesus, we carry his name wherever we go. Christian. By the way, that can get you killed in parts of this world. It can also keep you from getting jobs in this world. It can get you fired from your job in this world because of the name. So, when God changes your name, he's giving you a new identity and a new purpose for your life as well. And we're going to quit here because we're running out of time. But that those four things are happening in the context of these 10 verses here is that there's a crisis, midlife crisis. He's wrestling with God or man, and sometimes we don't know the difference, do we? Who are you wrestling with, really? You know, and that kind of stuff goes on. And you got all the midlife stuff that we have, and if you're between 35 and 50, I'll give you the best advice that I know, which is lay down until the feeling goes away. Let's pray. Just saying. Lord, I ask that you take anything that I said that's worthy of your name and that you work it into our lives wherever it needs to go into those cracks and crevices.